Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of fthismovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show. It is our annual rundown of our favorite horror movies of the last year, which means I am joined, as always, for this very special annual show by my horror BFF and the co-host of Craven Craven, Heather Wixon. Hi, Heather.
Hello. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year. How's everything going?
It's going. We're just a few days out from Scream, and then literally, I'm like, what else is going on? I have no idea.
Is it all downhill after Scream? Because I don't know if I could take that.
I don't know. Well, we've got, you know, as there was an announcement today about a new trailer coming from a Ty West joint.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
24, so yeah, that's pretty nifty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what to get excited about for this year, and I'm just sort of out of the loop. So I think for me right now, I'm just kind of really excited about Sundance because there's some pretty fun stuff going on there. Some really interesting things that I'm excited to dive into. And for anybody listening who doesn't know, you can dive in too because everything is remote this year and you can actually get tickets and passes to screenings and you don't have to be accredited or any fancy schmancy stuff like that. So,
yeah, I feel like I saw Censor that way last year. And yes. I wanted to see Prisoners of the Ghostland, but it was sold out, which I don't know how virtual screenings sell out, but whatever.
I think it's like they have a certain amount of slots that they can do.
Right.
You know, because it costs, for every slot, it costs some money. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. And I learned that from Kay, who runs Salem Horror Fest.
Yeah.
She did a really great breakdown of like why it costs festivals money to actually do these things virtually in how those costs can add up. But the more capacity that you put into there, it's like the servers have to work a little more, blah blah blah, and things like that. So they're like, it ends up being an added cost for the festival. So, but I think that they're like, I think what they're doing, a lot of them, is like you get like that initial premiere, and then if you wait a day, you can get in on the replay window, which I think runs for 72 hours. And I don't know if that's just press or not, but...
No, I think that's how it worked last year, too.
So I think that's a good opportunity for anybody out there who maybe wants to check this stuff out. So,
yeah, for sure.
You know, I encourage it because, you know, not everybody can be fancy pants hoity-polloities over there in Utah and stuff. So.
Right, right.
And I am nothing but a fancy pants hoity-polloity.
I know this about you.
I wasn't going to even go this year, to be really honest. I just didn't feel comfortable. Like, it's already an environment where a lot of people get sick as it is,
right?
So I was already planning on just doing all virtual. But I will say, like, Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, they've got a new movie there, which is pretty cool. Riley Stearns has got a horror movie there as well. So there's some pretty interesting things. So I have a couple screeners I'm going to be digging into this week for some interviews, and I'm pretty excited.
Do Benson and Moorhead crank out, like, a movie a year?
I think so. I'm pretty sure this was a pandemic movie for them.
Okay.
And the only reason I say it is because I saw a picture from it, and I forget. So one of them had blue hair in it, and I remember when I did an interview with them on video for Synchronic, they had the blue hair. So I think they were just wrapping up the movie. But I think they used the pandemic to their – I mean, because they're so good at making the most out of very little.
Right, right, right.
That, like, them to make a movie in the pandemic just makes sense.
Yeah, true.
You know? So, like, you know, everybody else is like, oh, my God, how are we going to make a movie? And they're like, this is how we make movies.
Right.
So I'm really curious to see how that is. But, yeah, so it should be fun. So anybody out there who's, you know, we've got a few schedule moves, and I think it seems like theaters are going to die down for a little bit.
Yes.
So if you want to embark on some new and interesting stuff, like, I'd say go check out the Sundance site. So, you know, but that's just me.
Cool.
Maybe it's too fancy pants. I don't know, but I just think it's kind of fun to be able to, because I think there's so many people who feel like they're left out by not being able to go to these festivals.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to encourage people to be involved with them if they can, because it's like a great opportunity, because, you know, who knows how it's going to be next year.
Right.
Of course, we'd all be living in, like, you know, caves and shit at that point. So who knows?
It's going to be a lot like it is right now next year, or worse. But I've done a couple of virtual fests over the last 2 years and had really good experiences with all of them. So I recommend it.
Yeah, I agree. And then we're all kind of part of it.
You are a top critic. You are a horror expert. How would you say this last year in horror has been?
Really good. Like, really good all over the board, which is, it made me trying to narrow, and I'm sort of cheating, but not really cheating with one of my options, but I'm guessing you'll probably figure out which one once we get to it. But, like, it was really hard for me to figure out the 10 movies because I had, like, so many. Like, usually when we do our favorites list for Daily Dead, like, I just kind of go through a list and I'll just write a little blurb about each movie.
Yeah.
And as I was going, and I was like, well, I need to talk about this one. I should mention this one, blah, blah, blah. I saw way too many things that I really enjoyed. Maybe I'm a bad critic. Maybe I liked more things than I shouldn't have. But, like, I just thought, like, you know, between the studio stuff that we were getting, all this great stuff on the indie side of things, like, if you were bored as a horror fan, like, you were doing it wrong, I think, last year.
Yeah, it's...
Was it similar for you?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I was saying just before we started recording that I had a hard time putting my list together, and it's not because there weren't enough good movies. It's just that there's a lot of movies that I liked. There's fewer that I loved. So I was trying to find the ones that I felt really strongly about or that I kind of wanted to highlight. But yeah, I mean, it's the movies, it's TV, it's Blu-rays releases, it's books. I know there were a couple major like horror novels released in the last year. I didn't get a chance to read any of them, of course, but I know there were several that I saw showing up on best of lists. So yeah,
some pretty good nonfiction books too.
I'm not familiar so much with the nonfiction books. I can't. None come to mind, so that's weird. Is there one in particular that you were thinking of?
Well, Clark Collis's You've Got Red on You is pretty great.
It is pretty good. Yeah, I did read it.
That's what you're not setting me up for.
It is not, no. But I did read that because Clark was a guest on the show, so that was fun.
Honestly, like, I'm jealous of how they packaged that book, too. It's like art.
Yeah.
Like, that whole presentation of it with the red trimmed pages, like, that is a sexy book.
Speaking of sexy books.
Are we getting into, like, some smut or, oh.
No, I'm trying to set you up to plug your shit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I did write a book that came out last
year.
You
did, and it did.
It did, yes. So Monsters, Makeup, and Effects Volume 1 was out. Volume 2 should be out sometime this summer.
What?
I can't believe it. Like, I'm actually going to finish all this stuff. Can you believe, like, after all these years?
Yeah.
I won't even know what to do with myself after all this. Except just write more books.
Write more books, exactly. I know exactly what you're going to do with yourself.
Yep, pretty much. I'm a glutton for punishments now.
I know it.
Yeah, it's funny because everyone's like, "Oh, are you gonna, you know, is there gonna, you know, are you gonna go beyond the four volumes?" And I'm like, "I'm gonna probably put the effects stories in book form to rest for a little bit, just because it's been a lot, and that's not in a bad way, but it's just, you know, it's been my life for almost 6 years now, and, you know, I need to take a little breather. I'm getting a 7 year itch where, you know." By the time all of this is done, it's going to be like 7 or 8 years, and then I would really need to step away. But I've been super fortunate. People have been really nice about it. I don't know if they're being genuine or not because, you know, who knows. But people have been very nice about it, so that's, I like that.
I have
so
a copy.
I'm debating because I still – thank you. I'm actually debating because I have to raise some money to finish up my transcriptions for – the last two volumes, because book two is already written, so that's, it's all good and it's done, but I still have like a handful of interviews I have to get transcribed, and so I'm debating whether or not I'm thinking about doing some like direct sales, so like if people want to buy them directly from me and then sign them, but I'm like, who the hell cares? I don't know if anybody cares enough.
I care. I'd buy it that way.
But I just figured, like, that'd be a good way to, like, you know, because I still have to pay at least 50% of the book's cost when I buy them. But, you know, I figure I can kind of, you know, use the extra and just build that up towards, you know, paying for a transcription and stuff like that. So we'll see. I have to figure that out in the next few weeks because I got to get started on all that stuff on top of everything else going on.
All right. F this movie listeners, step it up.
Yeah. If you're interested, let me know. Yes. I don't know. I live in a bubble. Like I just kind of feel like nobody gives a crap. Like
everybody gives a crap.
No, I just, you know, it's like one of those things, like when you write stuff, you just don't know if anybody cares. And you want people to care, but you don't know if it's just because you care. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if that's my creative insecurity talking or not. So
I can say with authority that nobody cares when I write stuff. But I also know for a fact that people care when you write stuff.
That is some bullarchy right there.
Okay.
That's not even mullarchy, and it's not even bullshit. It's bullarchy.
Wow, a new word.
It's both together. Yeah, it's our catchphrase for the show. Hashtag bullarchy this year, guys.
I like it. Let's get into our top 10 lists. We'll count down from 10 and go to 1. And Heather, I will let you go first.
Okay. Yeah. So like I said, this was really tough for me. Like actually right before we started, I realized there was a movie. I was like, oh man, I can't believe I forgot to put that on my list. And so I had to do some swapping around of things. So my number 10 is, I'm going to hopefully not screw up her name, is Danishka's Esterhazy's Slumber Party Massacre remake.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I think it's funny. I don't think most people know that it exists because Sci-Fi did a very bad job, I think, of promoting the movie. And then they also aired the edited version of the movie on the channel.
Right. And they aired it like one time, right?
One time. You're in October. You've got this great movie and you air it one time.
Yeah.
And I don't want to take anything away from Chucky or Day of the Dead, but those things are repeating all the time.
Yeah.
So I know it's on VOD now.
And there's a Scream Factory. There is a Scream Factory Blu-ray. Is it out?
Is it out or is it coming? I think it's out because I do the Blu-ray.
Yeah, you would know better than me. Hold on, I'm looking it up. It's probably not out yet. Where the hell is it? Yeah, you could buy it, on Amazon VOD for like $5.99 or $6.99. Where the hell is the Blu-ray though? Well, keep talking and I'll look it up. And
anyway, yeah. So I just was, you know, I love the original Slumber Party Massacre. I know remakes these days are a touchy subject. I mean, they've always been a touchy subject, I guess. You know, cause it's the internet, Jake. so, you know, it's, nobody can quite have an open mind, but as much as I love the original Slumber Party Massacre, I really like the sort of changes that Suzanne Kelly makes. It is Keeley. I apologize. My eyes are a little blurry because I don't sleep anymore. That she does with the script, like you know, the movie really sets you up thinking it's going to be one thing. It becomes something else. And then all of a sudden the third act becomes something completely different.
Right.
And I just really enjoyed that. Like I liked going in and not knowing where it was going to go. Like it gives you the basic premise. It has fun with the concept. So, you know, their sort of take on Russ Thorne made me laugh a lot. Like they got it. They got why it's such a ridiculously fun character, like, you know, in the best possible ways. Like it just, for me, it just nailed everything that I wanted in a slasher remake. And I loved it. And I felt like it deserved to be talked about a little bit more. Cause I do think it's a movie that kind of came and went and I don't think a lot of people really even know that it sort of happened.
I think people will hopefully start to discover it. Hopefully, you know, it ends up on Shudder or something at some point and people start watching it because it is, you know, I hesitate to call horror movies fun a lot of times because I feel like it kind of ends the conversation because, like, who can argue with fun? If you say, like, it was fun, it's like, well, all right, you had fun. If I didn't, that sucks to be me, but I can't argue with you if you had fun with it. But that's it's the perfect descriptor for this movie. It's really entertaining and really fun. And I think we talked about it a little bit on a previous podcast, maybe a Horror BFFs or something, that there was a point near the end of the film where it starts to lose me.
I get that too. Yeah. Because it's tonally, it changes.
And exactly.
It becomes something different, and I get it. Like, I understand that, like, that sort of final shift that it does isn't everybody's bag.
Yeah.
But I actually kind of like that, because at a certain point you're like, okay, this is the ride that we're going on. And then once again, they kind of pull the rug out from under you.
Right.
And you're like, oh, wait. Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Maybe the reason it kind of is a bit of a bummer is because we really like these characters as much as we do.
For sure.
So, but yeah. God bless guy one and guy two in that movie. Like, that to me was like one of my favorite gags. Like, it's up there, like, with the Susan radiologist glasses from Prince of Darkness. Like, when I think of just weird random things right. that get sort of stuck into these movies, and guy one and guy two was inspired.
All right. So that's number 10. Slumber Party Massacre. My number 10 is a total cheat, so I'm going to apologize for that right now, because this movie technically came out in 2020, but nobody really saw it until 2021 because it was completely dumped and ignored. So I've seen it show up on some 2021 best of lists, and I was like, well, if they can do it, so can I. And that is David Pryor's The Empty Man.
I still haven't seen it.
It's definitely worth seeing. Like, I just saw it for the first time a couple days ago. It's streaming, I think, on HBO Max, or at least it was.
Is.
Okay.
I hover around it, like, at least once a week.
Well, it's super long, so it's hard to watch, because it's like, I don't have 2 hours and 20 minutes to devote to this movie right now.
Especially when Speed is also sitting right there on HBO Max, and I'm like, I can just work to that.
But no, The Empty Man is really interesting. I don't know what to compare it to. Like, it's based on a graphic novel, and I don't want to talk that much about it because I don't want to give too much away, but it stars James Badge Dale as a private investigator who's looking into the disappearance of this teenage girl. It feels a lot like sort of a contemporary take on The Wicker Man. And I don't think that gives anything away. I don't know for sure, but, it is long. I don't know that it needs to be 2 hours and 20 minutes, but it held my attention the entire time. It's really creepy. It's really interesting. I tweeted out like a half joke that I liked it, but I'm not smart enough to totally get it. And I meant that. Like, there's stuff in this movie that I'm like, I'm not positive I understand exactly what's happening, but I was invested enough that it didn't totally matter. I was kind of along for the ride.
This intrigues me so much more, to be really honest. Like, if it's on your list, that to me, I'm like, all right, now I got to carve out some time for this.
Yeah. I think it's worth watching. You may not love it, but I definitely think it's worth seeing at least.
All right. I'm going to make time for it this month.
I'm excited.
All right, I'm going to do it. So I have a few things I have to get through in the next few weeks, but I'm going to do this.
Okay.
So I'll try to squeeze it in before Sundance, but I am intrigued now.
All right, good.
So, by the way, how amazing is HBO Max?
It's pretty great. I was worried it was going to be like kind of unnecessary, but it's great. It's probably one of the ones I watch the most.
It is, like, honestly, like, between that and Shudder, like, I feel like most of my streaming, like, needs are met.
Yeah.
By those two platforms alone. I mean, admittedly, they did take off Point Break from HBO Max in December, but it's fine.
Because Speed is there.
But Speed is there, yes. Although, I actually, that's how I watched Speed 2 for the first time.
Oh, dear.
In November. Yeah, I did it. I finally did it.
So now you remember where you were when Rush Hour hit the water.
I was at home. Actually, it's funny. I was at Fantastic Fest it was on TV. And so I watched like the first 30 minutes of it. I got to like the leeches part and I was like, okay. I mean, I give them credit for doing some weird shit in that movie, but I was like, okay. And the bride's like, I can't believe you're watching this without me. And I'm like, all right, I'll stop. We'll watch it together. Cause that's been one of the things he's like, you have to see how ridiculous this movie is. So yeah. I have now experienced it. It has happened. I refuse to see it in theaters. So
I saw it at the Dollar Show and had to pee worse than I've ever had to pee in my entire life. But I refused to get up and miss a minute of it. Cause I was like, I'm getting my dollar's worth. God damn it. So when the movie ended, I just like limped up the aisle to the bathroom because I couldn't stand up straight. That's what I remember about Speed 2. I barely remember the movie. I just remember how bad I had to pee.
Yeah, you know, they tried. You know, sure. That's all I can say. They tried. They tried really hard. So there you go. So, well, I like that I've already have one movie to check out now.
Yeah.
So that excites me.
All right, good. All right, you're number 9.
Okay, so my number 9 is a movie that I actually saw in 2020, but it technically didn't come out until this year. It did like the festival run in 2020, but it got its official release this year. And that would be Anthony Scott Burns's Come True.
Ah, shit, I haven't seen it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, here's one that you can see.
Yeah.
Look, we're gonna trade back and forth. you know, I love movies that really just make the most out of little resources. And I'm not saying that to downplay what they do in this movie, but there's just such a really, the way that established this aesthetic in this vibe, in this atmosphere, in this mood. Like I saw this as part, I think it was Fantasia 2020. And so we're talking like a year and a half at least now. And I haven't been able to shake it. It's got a fantastic score, which I think is Pilot Priest, who is... Well, part of it's Pilot Priest, which I think is Anthony Scott Burns. And then the other part is Electric Youth. It's just... To me, it feels like a really great movie if it wanted to take up the mantle of what you would want from like a Nightmare on Elm Street movie these days.
Okay.
Like, because it deals with sleep paralysis and these really terrible nightmares, and it goes into the science of nightmares and how they, you know, can kind of overlap into the real world and things like that. Julius Sarah Stone, who plays sort of the lead in the movie, she is freaking phenomenal. Like, she puts everything into this performance. And it's great. And it's one of those, like, when I first saw it, I wasn't sure how I felt about, there's like the last 2 minutes, things get revealed in a very interesting way, and I'll leave it at that. But I was kind of like, really? Okay, that's what we're doing? But the more the time that I've spent with it, and I've watched it like 2 or 3 other times, because I also talked about it with Travis Stevens when we did a episode of Corpse Club for Indie Horror Month. But I'll tell you, the more that I've spent with it, the more I'm okay with where it ends, because okay. It's not what I was expecting. But it's phenomenal for a movie that was made, you know, on a micro budget. Like, it doesn't feel it. It's phenomenal. And it's one of those movies, I think it kind of just sort of snuck past a lot of fans. And I don't know if it's streaming anywhere.
It's streaming on Hulu, because they pick up a lot of those IFC Midnight titles. So I've watched a lot of Hulu in the last week trying to play catch ups, because I'm like, oh, this is on Hulu too. And part of my problem is I kept confusing it with the Gillian Jacobs one, which is Come Play.
Oh, yes.
And I was like,
which I haven't seen.
Yeah. And I had heard bad things, and I was like, well, I don't want to see that. And then I end up not seeing Come True because I think it's the wrong movie.
All right. Well, go see the right movie.
I think you'll
be intrigued by it.
All right. I'm down.
Yeah. All right. Look at that. We both already have movies on our list.
I like this.
To watch. Okay. So what's next? What's your number 9?
My number 9 is an anthology. It's called VHS 94.
I feel like I've heard of this one.
Yeah, right? This is the fourth VHS movie. It is currently streaming on Shudder if you're interested in seeing it. It is, in keeping with a lot of anthologies, I don't think there was a single segment that I loved, but I think I liked all of them enough. And I just like anthologies. I think of the anthologies I saw this year, and I only saw a couple, this one was my favorite. You know, like Ratma, I was like kind of lukewarm on when I saw it. And then the more that has become a meme, the more I'm like, okay, that kind of rules. Like, Hail Ratma is actually pretty great.
I don't mean to brag, but I did interview Ratma.
I know you did.
I don't mean to brag, but I did. You know, so I'm pretty cool.
Hail Rama. Simon Barrett's segment is creepy. Timo's segment is bananas. Radio Silence, is that what they're called? They do the vampire one at the end?
Yes.
I thought that was interesting. Again, I don't think there's any, you know, there's nothing that's as strong as, like, Safe Haven in VHS 2. But there's almost nothing in any anthology that's as strong as Safe Haven in VHS 2, so that's an unfair bar to ask this movie to clear. But I think there's a lot of good stuff in it, and like I said, I just like anthologies. I was happy to put one on my list.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by it. I'm sort of with you. Like, I liked it. I liked everything about it. I don't know if, like, I super duper loved it.
Right.
But, like, I'm really glad that they kind of came back with this and sort of reworked the approach a little bit, where it's like, you know, it was sort of set within this time, the confines of 1994. So it had to be very specific technology and things like that, because I think it made everybody have to really stretch themselves creatively. I did enjoy Timo. Again, it's one of those, I'm like, but it's not Safe Haven, but it did make me wish that we get Timo to direct a BioShock movie, because that would be amazing, just based on what we see here. That's a video game, Patrick.
Thank you. I was going to say, is BioShock a video game?
So I don't have to catch you up on that, but it just made me realize, I was like, wow, if we ever do get a BioShock movie, that would be, he's the guy I'd like to see it from, so... but yeah, I was pleasantly surprised, because I was, the last one we had, I was kind of lukewarm on.
Oof,
like,
there's, no, like, I was not a fan of VHS Viral.
I think there was, I like the Benson and Moorhead segment a lot. And
was theirs the skaters?
Yeah, because it just felt very like LA West Coast.
Sure,
to me,
sure,
so
sure.
I'm an easy layup for that kind of stuff. So it's like, you know, I'm in. It's. So, but yeah, it was fun to sort of see come back. I'm really curious to see where it goes from here, because I'm guessing this was pretty successful for everybody. Because everybody was talking about it. I know it did really well on Shudder.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping we get more from this. And I like the fact that, you know, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but I like the fact that we actually got, you know, female directors involved for a change.
Right, right.
Go figure.
Hail Ratma.
Hail Ratma. So, yeah.
All right. We are at your number 8.
All right. So my number 8 is this little indie movie that I'm sure nobody is aware of, that came out this year starring Chris Rock and Samuel L. Jackson, called Spiral from the Book of Saw.
Interesting. I did not see this coming.
Yeah. Look, I'm a slut for the Saw movies. Give me a good mystery, wrap it up in horror, and I care. And to be, you know, and it's one of those, like, I, you know, and I'll be full disclosure, like, you know, Brian, you know, sometimes works with Darren. But it's funny, because, like, when I go see things that Darren does, he's like, he immediately like, what did you think? Like, somehow what I say actually matters. And he was really nervous, because we were amongst the first people to see it that weren't part of Lionsgate and things like that. And I was really nervous, honestly, as a fan. And it was interesting, because, like, I just, like, Jigsaw has grown on me a little bit. I'm still not 100% with it. It's
the movie Jigsaw.
Like, the movie Jigsaw, not
Got
the
it.
Character.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, everybody loves Tobin. But I wanted something that felt more in line with the unexpected. Like, I just, everything about Jigsaw just kind of felt like I saw it coming, where this does a pretty good job of mixing things up. I do think that there's some stuff that is a little underbaked in terms of the story. You know, and you can't just put Chris Rock in a hat and expect us to believe it's 20 years ago or whatever it is. You know, I mean, you know, bless him. He's still, you know, he's looked the same for 20 years already.
Yeah.
But I really, like, I just remember feeling absolutely giddy sitting in that room watching this and not knowing where I was going and everything. And it was like, the reality is like, how many more times can you dig up the character Jigsaw at this point? You really can't. Like, they made, you know, and this is something I know Darren has said too, like, them killing Jigsaw, you know, so early in the series really put them in a corner.
Right.
And so how do you get yourself out of the corner now? Because people still want this stories from this world, but you can't, like, you just can't bring him back like 15 years later when he's been dead. And I think they did a really interesting, they did it in a very interesting way. I totally saw the killer coming, but I didn't care. Like, I just, it didn't matter to me. And I thought it was interesting, and it's got some really fun set pieces. You know, especially the tongue thing really freaked me out.
Oof.
A lot. I have such a weird, like, I don't ever want to get my tongue ripped out, I guess is the best way to put it. I mean, I don't really know.
You're unique in that way.
Yeah. I know most people are looking for that, but I'm very much a fan of my tongue and I want to keep it. And so that to me was like a super, like, oh my God, we're hitting hard at the beginning. But I thought it did a really great job of opening this up in a way that, like, you could do more movies or tell more stories in this universe. And you don't really have to rely on the stuff from the past as much.
Right.
You know, and it's interesting to me, like, how much it goes into police corruption, especially because this movie was made a few years before everything. Not that police corruption suddenly wasn't around and just popped up. We've known it's been an issue for years, but the timeliness of it really hit home, especially with everything that we've been dealing with the last few years. And I was a big fan, you know.
Nice.
I enjoyed it, and I was ready to be super hypercritical of it, you know, because I like to bust Darren's balls a lot. But I walked out and I was like, yeah, I freaking loved it. I had a great time. So yeah, it's one of those, I'm like, wow, we got Jigsaw back. You know, it's really surprising because, like, as we move forward, that's literally my only franchise movie on my list.
I don't think I have any either.
It's, which is weird.
Yeah.
Which is really weird.
Well, VHS I have, so.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, big studio franchises.
Right.
This is the only one that appears on my list. And I'm just as shocked about it as other people probably are.
How do you feel about the new Jigsaw voice? He talks a lot like Edward Snowden. He's like, oh, hello, I'm Jigsaw.
I don't really know what Edward Officer. Snowden talks about.
I don't either. But I just know that Joseph Gordon-Levitt played him in a movie and he talked like this. I'm Edward Snowden. Hello,
you know,
Chris Rock. Would you like to play a game?
I mean, it kind of fits for how dehumanizing the internet is these days anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like, because
sure,
we're all sort of dehumanized via technology, you know, whether it's like, you know, via text or, you know, via audio. You know what I mean? Like, this would be so much more engaging for the people listening if we were all sitting in a room talking about our top favorite movies, right? But we're not. We have this, like, layer of disconnection between us because we're doing a podcast. So, like, you know, it was fine. I didn't need to hear John Kramer's voice.
No.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I was okay. I was all right with that. You know, so, and I think because of where things end up getting revealed, I think it kind of makes sense.
All right.
You know, so I was fine with it, you know. I mean, it's not as, you know, imposing as the John Kramer Jigsaw voice. Because, like, anytime you hear that, like, you just, you're in that moment, right?
Right.
You know, so it doesn't quite have the same hook, but I didn't need it to.
All right.
It has a different hook, so, if that makes sense.
I like it.
All right, cool. So what's your number eight?
What is my number eight? My number eight is The Night House, the latest movie from David Bruckner. Is that...
Ooh, that is on my list as well. And I was like, because honestly, I forgot to mention it in my favorites list for Daily Dead because I saw it at Sundance 2020. And I was like, oh my God. As soon as I saw a bunch of people talking about it for their 2021 favorites, and I was like, oh my God, that really was this year. I felt like such an ass. So mine is a little bit higher, but I love that you have it.
Yeah. We'll wait to talk about it till we get to it on your list.
No, we could talk about it.
No, we'll wait till it's higher. We should wait to...
We're not going to have to wait that much longer.
All right.
You know? So we can go into it.
I'm a David Bruckner fan. I'm a Rebecca Hall fan. I thought her performance was amazing in the movie. She's really kind of the whole show. I liked the dread of the whole thing. I will admit that there's a certain point where the movie shifts and you realize how much of it is sort of metaphor. And that loses me a little because I'm a little tired of movies that are like, good Lord, metaphors for... grief,
and I'm not
or
even by an open window.
That's just in your house.
Yeah.
Movies that are just metaphors for grief or metaphors for trauma. It's like, I've seen these a lot. And I think The Night House does run up against that a little bit, but it's incredibly well made. It has some really good scares, and I'm not somebody who scares really easily, but it's just creepy as hell. And like I said, it's anchored by that performance that I think is probably my favorite performance in a horror movie this year.
It's definitely up there for me as well, in terms of performance. Like, Rebecca Hall is so freaking good because, like, the whole movie just it ride or die. It's like, you know, it lives or dies by her performance.
Yeah,
and she pulls you in such a way where you believe everything that's happening to her and that she's reacting like a typical person would. And I will say, on a technical level, some of the camera tricks that they use in that movie are freaking phenomenal.
For sure.
Like, it really, it's a movie you really have to pay attention to.
Yeah.
And I think it's fascinating too, you know, now that Bruckner is doing Hellraiser, but that it was a movie that I think he intended for it to be a Hellraiser movie, because they sort of back off, and this isn't really a spoiler, but there's like a part of it where like, she kind of finds out there's like some weird architecture to her house, and I'll leave it like that.
Right.
That her husband, who's gone, like, was building. And you can see where when you go back and look at it, because I've seen it twice now, like, you can see where that would have been the opening for a Hellraiser scenario.
Right.
But then they kind of back off it a little bit in that regard.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But it's, you know, it's one of those where I think, you know, because it was made in 2019, you know, it, unfortunately, because we've seen so many movies about metaphorical trauma and grief over the last 2 years because of the times we're living in and things like that, like, I think it just got kind of caught in sort of this web of movies that are of the same ilk,
mm-hmm.
albeit it was ahead of them.
Sure. Yeah.
So, but it is a phenomenal piece of filmmaking. Like, I as soon as I put my favorites list up, I was like looking on Twitter that day and I saw somebody mention it. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot The Night House on my list. Holy shit.
It happens every year where you put your list out and then you're like, oh God damn it, I forgot to mention, you know, X. And it always...
Well, we're also living in a time where, like, everything keeps getting moved around. So, I like, nothing, like, time means absolutely nothing to me anymore. Like, you could tell me a 2019 movie came out, like, yesterday, and I'd be like, yeah, sure, that makes sense.
Well, especially when you get into festival stuff, because there's movies that you saw 2 years ago that just came out this year that you're like, oh, I forgot to put it on my list because I... have lived with this movie for 2 years. Like, it didn't occur to me that it came out in 2021.
Yeah. So it's just one of those where I'm just like, oh God, I couldn't believe I forgot it. So I'm glad you mentioned it. And yes, it did make it onto my list as well.
Okay, cool.
And it's also great score as well. And I think also too, like, I think there's a lot of the reveals that I think are very telegraphed, but honestly, like, it's still really unnerving when it happens.
Yeah.
And it's not, I'm like you were, it's not easy to crawl up under my skin. It's not easy to leave me feeling a little anxious. And it really does a great job of that.
Yeah.
So go find The Nighthouse, kids. You'll thank us.
It's good. You can rent it at like a Redbox, or you can rent it off Amazon for a couple bucks. I don't think it's streaming anywhere like for free, quote unquote, yet. But who knows? Maybe Shudder will pick it up. I don't know.
I hope they do. I really do. Because I think that's one that would really benefit from as many people as possible having access to it.
Yeah.
You know.
I think I only have two studio movies on my list, and that's one of them.
Interesting. I have two and a half-ish, I guess. I guess three I have.
Okay.
Or I guess technically four. We'll figure it out.
It's all right. All good.
All right.
We are at your number seven.
Okay. So my number seven, it's honestly like all of these movies are number one in my heart. That's how I want to say this. Because it was just like one of these things where like, honestly, some of these movies I've just seen more. So I've been able to like absorb them more.
Absolutely.
So if I had seen this movie a couple more times, it probably would have gone a little higher. But my number seven is Edgar Wright's Last Night in Soho.
Oh, very nice. So this does not appear on my list because this was on my list of just favorites for the year. This was my number two for the whole year.
Nice. I knew you were going to love it.
Yeah, you were right.
I know. Sometimes I'm right.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm wrong. But, you know. But I have a pretty good gauge for, I think, what should hit with you.
Yeah. No, I'm a huge fan of this movie.
I mean, to me, like, as somebody who, you know, has been following Edgar Wright's career, probably, like, we saw Shaun of the Dead before it actually came out, on a whim. We saw that they were doing a special screening of it ahead of its release, so I have a special, like, fold-out poster and things, like, so following his career for, like, almost 20 years now, which is crazy.
Yeah.
To even think about what is time anymore. To me, this really ranks up there in terms of, I think, with more time, this could become my favorite Edgar Wright movie.
Oh, nice.
And I say that as somebody who actually ranks Hot Fuzz ahead of Shaun of the Dead.
Hot Fuzz rules. There's a lot of Point Break references.
Yeah. You know, and Bad Boys, too. So, you know.
But oh, no.
I just... huh?
I said, oh, no, I thought you died.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, not yet. I'll wait till we get a little higher in the list.
All right. Thank you.
I'm not going to leave you in a lurch this early in the episode. But to me, like, I absolutely fell in love with Eloise/Ellie. Like, Thomas and Mackenzie. Like, I know everyone talks about Anya Taylor-Joy, and for good reason. She's a phenomenal actress. She's a showstopper. She's a smoke show. Like, she's amazing. But, like, Thomas and Mackenzie is, like, the heart of this story. And I, like... 20 seconds into this movie, I loved her. I absolutely loved her. And I wanted to protect her from everything that was coming towards her.
Yeah.
Because I miss being that optimistic about life. Do you know what I mean? Like, even through the bad things that she's had to deal with, she still has this sort of beautiful optimism to her. And to me, it just, like, it takes you on this ride back in time. You know, and I know everybody loves Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but for me, this was sort of a more satisfying visit back to the 60s because it wasn't trying to ape specific things, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Like, it has these moments in time, but it doesn't feel like it's pulling directly. Like, it's recreating a world, but also creating its own world, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense. And I like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood a lot. But for me, it was just like to get caught up in the music and the brilliant production design, the absolutely like mind blowing camera work that
yeah.
they use basically a lot of Poltergeist 3 tricks for with the mirrors and stuff like that. Like, holy shit. Like, I left that movie and I was just like, my mouth was agape. I was agape. and I think I texted you like right after I saw it. And I was like, you're going to love this. And it's just, it's such a phenomenal piece of work from Edgar. Like, I think for me, I love seeing the progression of him as a storyteller. I love seeing him doing other things, you know, as much as I'm like, of course I want to see him do more with like Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, who doesn't? But ultimately, like, this to me just was like, it made my heart sore. I don't love the digital ghosty things that kind of pop up in the
movie.
No,
I don't either.
I felt like that to me was a little, for as authentic and real as everything else felt, it felt like a little bit of a step back.
Yeah.
But I still loved it.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't enough to derail me. So yeah, and I just, it was really nice because, and I don't mean to say this like I'm bragging or anything, but like when I talked about it after seeing it, Fantastic Fest, Edgar messaged me and we talked about it a lot. And this is really like a movie that he made as like a love letter to his mom and all the things that she made him fall in love with as a kid. And I know that like Christy Wilson Cairns was like the co-writer on the script, but like you just get a sense of that deep affection. And to me, I think that made me almost love it more, where it was like he made a movie for his mom.
Yeah.
Like, and she loved it. And like, that's really cool. Like, my mom doesn't even, like, hasn't even acknowledged the fact that I wrote a book, you know? So it's just like, there's just everything about it. I love it. I know it's coming out soon, in like a week or two now.
Yeah, I think next week.
Yeah, on Blu-ray and stuff. So I'm really hoping I get a copy of it because I want to revisit it. So I'm waiting to see if it comes in or not. But yeah, I just, it's so great. I really can't wait to watch it again and again and probably again and again.
Yeah, I've seen it like 4 times now, and I do not get tired of it. I listen to the soundtrack on repeat. It's just a movie that I really fell in love with on first viewing, and like you, I'm Team Thomason. Adam Riske describes himself as a joy boy, but I am Team Thomason all the way.
I get it.
She is... I mean, they're both great, but yeah, Thomasin McKenzie, I think, gives a real kind of star-making performance in this movie. And it made me wonder, though, do you think Edgar Wright needs a collaborator? Because, you know, his best movies are kind of written with Simon Pegg.
I
don't love Baby Driver, and he wrote that one on his own, I guess is what I'm getting at, because I was happy to see him collaborating with someone again on this movie.
Yeah, I don't really love Baby Driver either, and I love it less now for obvious reasons.
Sure.
And no offense to anybody who likes him, I'm sure you can go ahead and send all your hate tweets over to @TheHorrorChick, but watching Ansel Elgort is just basically like watching like a piece of white bread on screen for me. I don't find him interesting in any way, shape, or form.
Creepy white bread.
Yeah, now creepy white bread. Like the best part of that movie is John Barenthal. Like,
100%. You know.
And getting to watch Kevin Spacey get run over.
spoiler.
You know, spoiler. You know. Anyway, so it's just like, there's on a technical level, there's a lot that I appreciate about that movie.
Definitely.
Because it was an impossible movie to make in that regard. But ultimately, like, it's not one that I revisit very often. I actually don't think I have. I've only watched it once beyond the theater.
Yeah. Yeah, same with me.
So, you know, and it's just, you know, if I'm going to watch an Edgar Wright movie, it's probably going to be either Sean or Hot Fuzz.
Me too. Or yeah, Last Night in Soho now, right?
Now Last Night in Soho. So
yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
Great pick. Love it.
All right.
My number 7 is a movie I saw in 2020, but didn't come out until 2021. It was a movie I saw at, what the hell's the Canadian, Fantasia Fest?
Yes, Fantasia Film Fest.
Again, virtually, because I did not travel to Canada. They did it virtually. And it knocked me out, and I was afraid it was one of those movies that was going to just completely fall by the wayside. And it more or less did. It did get scooped up by Dread, and they put it out. And that is For the Sake of Vicious.
I knew that's where you were going, and that was one that made my honorable mentions, like, in my favorites list. Because that movie knocked me on my ass, too, I'll tell you what.
It rules.
Like, I'm so shocked at how great, like, not that I don't think that the directors are great, but I was like, wow, these guys really made the most of a one-location movie with a very minimal cast and just brought it. Like, they brought it. I'm so glad it made your list.
It's kind of a bad title. I mean, the use of the word vicious is appropriate because this is a nasty movie. It's a Canadian film. I don't want to talk about it that much because, again, I sat down just not knowing anything. I knew Laura Burke was in it, and I've seen her in a handful of things, and I was like, well, I'll give that a shot. She was so great in... Oh, God, what was that movie? Poor Agnes? Did you ever see Poor Agnes?
I did not see Poor Agnes.
Okay, she's really fantastic in that movie. And it's, you know, a guy shows up at a house with a prisoner, sort of, and demands that Laura Burke, who plays a nurse, kind of help him. And then it becomes like a siege movie that's just one of the most brutal and violent things you will see in a long time. It's like a tight 80-something minutes. It's really, really terrific, and I'm so glad that it did find at least some distribution, because I want to turn more people on to it.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where, like, it doesn't waste a frame, and I know that's such a cliche thing to say, but it literally gets in there, and then it just goes, and it keeps going. Yeah. It doesn't stop, and then you're at the end, and you're like, you really feel like you've been, like, it almost feels like you've been, like, on a car chase for 83 or 85 minutes or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you're like, at the end, like, you know, you're like, whew. Like, I need a drink or I need something. Like, you know, you've been through it. And they do some, like, especially for the house that they had to shoot in, which is a really small, very intimate location. Yeah. And the way that they work the camera in there is, like, astounding to me. Like, I was floored by what they were able to do. And I think I actually did an interview for it as well, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. Everything last year was kind of a blur. I'm like, I covered this, right? I think I did. But I'm glad to make. And I think we even talked about it, like, as soon as I saw it, because you're like, oh, what are you watching? And I told you, and you're like, oh, I loved it. And I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a great movie.
It's streaming on Shudder for those of you who are interested. I did not know that. I just looked it up and saw that it's available on Shudder. So definitely check it out.
Oh, I think it just showed up like in the last couple weeks too.
Maybe that's why I didn't know.
Yeah, it's so hard keeping up with everything. It really is. But bless Shudder for making our jobs easier in terms of trying to find stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of a one-stop shop, which is nice.
Yeah.
What are we up to, six?
We're up to six.
Okay.
And my six was your eight, so mine is The Night House.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. I told you we were not going to have to wait too long.
No, we did not have to wait long. All right.
Yeah. So what is your number six?
My number six is a French film that I just saw on Shudder like 2 weeks ago. It's a movie called Candisha.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
It's pretty cool. It's about these three girlfriends who summon a spirit called Aisha Candisha, which is like this Moroccan legend. It takes place in Morocco. And again, I've never seen a horror movie set in Morocco. And
interesting.
Aisha Candisha is this beautiful woman, but she has like hooves from the waist down. And she exists only to murder men. And that's
wow,
the movie.
It's like my life.
Right. So it's, you know, there's elements of like a djinn or a genie, but the wish it grants is I will kill all the men in your life. And I'd heard it described and somebody said like, oh yeah, it's got some really good gore. And I was watching it. I was like, this does not have any good gore. And then I get to the last third and I was like, oh shit, there it is. So stick with it because it definitely pays off. And again, it's like under 90 minutes in a year where more and more movies are 2.5 hours, including my number 10. It's kind of nice to watch some of these horror movies that know how to get in and get it out and tell a quick and like tight story. I liked the novelty of a folk legend that I was unfamiliar with. I liked the gore. I liked the performances of the three main girls. I think it's a really solid movie that, like I said, is also streaming on Shudder.
Awesome. All right. I'm sold. You're giving me homework, Patrick, and I don't know how I feel about this, but if it makes me watch good horror movies, I guess I come out the winner then.
Hopefully you like them.
Okay. All right. And I like that they're easy to find. That makes it even better for me.
Yeah, a lot of my picks I feel like are streaming on Shudder.
Nice. So basically, I'm a Saw slut and you're a Shudder slut.
Correct.
Cool. We got that covered then.
Yeah. All right, top five. Here we go.
Oh, here we go, everybody. Okay, so my number five is a horror comedy. Like, and again, like my top five are pretty interchangeable. Like, on any given day, any of them could have been in any of these slots. I mean, actually, any of the movies on this probably could have done that. But I'm a huge fan of this director. I knew very little about the property it was based on. But I'll tell you, I've already watched the movie four times this year or last year. And I absolutely love it. And it is Josh Rubin's Werewolves Within.
Oh, I knew that was going to be on your list. I toyed with putting it like on my list somewhere in that bottom five. But I was like, you know what? Heather will talk about it. And then I can talk about something else. And we can recommend more movies to more people.
Yes.
I half expected this to be your number one.
You know what? And any given date, it probably could have been. It's so tough because all of my top five, like, I love them wholeheartedly for such different reasons. For me, Werewolves Within, you know, very much is like Clue with werewolves, set in a remote cabin. You don't know what's going on. It's just an absolute delight. And it's so hard to find whodunits that can really nail the mystery and the reveal. And I think they do an incredible job of it. I think Mishna Wolf, who wrote the script for it, does a great job of doing something, because then we went back and kind of looked at the video game, because I knew of it, but I never had played around with it or anything like that. And after I showed the movie to Brian, like, because I knew it was going to be so up his alley, and it was. And he's not somebody who watches a lot of new movies multiple times himself. And he's watched this a few times, too. And so we went back and we're looking at the game, and it just captures the spirit of the game, but does something really fun that works cinematically. Sam Richardson is absolutely phenomenal. So is Milana Vaintrub, I think is her name, mm-hmm. Who is also the AT&T girl. it's just like the thing that like, it's so, I love movies when you watch them the first time and you just immediately fall in love. But what I love is when you go back and you watch these movies and you can pick up on all these like little things that you've missed along the way. And there is like some seriously great, like little lines that kind of come out of nowhere in this movie that like, once you watch it, like the second or third time, like I laughed even harder because you're able to catch up on, you know, these little things that Harvey Guillen is saying and everything, like just all these like little beats that like you don't quite see the first time. And it's phenomenal. Like I just adored it. It's just a delight of a movie. And you know how I feel about horror comedies. So, you know, I knew when they announced it, like based on my response to Scare Me, I knew I was going to enjoy it. But I think Josh Rubin here proves like, he's so good at stories within like stories being told on the screen. And I'm not just saying like the story of the movie, but just like stories in general. Like it just takes me back to a time when like stories felt important, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed, Scare Me as kind of like a novelty. Like I thought it was really interesting what he did directorially. And, but Werewolves Within is like a huge leap forward, 'cause he's working with this big ensemble cast. He's working with like real effects and, a larger scope and a larger story. And really, he reminds me of Edgar Wright in a lot of ways in terms of like the confidence of his visual storytelling and the pace of the editing. He's got a lot of Edgar Wright in him. But yeah, this was a really entertaining movie.
And they have Ace of Base in there.
And there's Ace of Base in there.
So, you know, the 90s kid, you know, 90s teenager in me is like, yeah. So yeah, it is just phenomenal. And I know it came out at the end of last year on Blu-ray and DVD. If you haven't had a chance to see it, I do recommend it, because it's just like, it's one of those movies. Like I just feel like the way it's funny. Like as a kid, I used to talk about Clue all the time, and nobody knew like what I was talking about.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know this is a pretty popular movie amongst horror fans, but I think this is one of those movies that has legs to it that I think the more time goes on, the more people outside of our little sphere of horror are going to really discover this movie and fall in love with it too.
Yeah. Yeah. So. It's, I forgot what I was going to say, but we played Clue on New Year's Eve and I won. I just want to point that out.
Nice.
Yeah.
We have Family Guy Clue in our house.
For real?
Yeah, we do.
Nice. The Clue that we played was from Erica's childhood. Like, it still had like a Venture sticker on it. So
I wish I still had my Clue from when I was a kid. Trust me. That's amazing that it had the Venture sticker on there though.
Yeah.
That takes me back.
Yeah.
Oh, miss you Venture.
All right. So my five is a movie I think I saw out of Panic Fest this year. And another one that is streaming on Shudder, and that is a horror comedy called Vicious Fun.
I have not seen that.
Okay. I was ready to hate it because it's set in the 80s for no discernible reason other than like to be set in the 80s and have a synthesizer score and dress its main character, played by Evan Marsh, like Marty McFly.
Okay.
And I was like, I like these things. I like synthesizer scores. I like Marty McFly, but I was resisting what the movie was doing. And it's essentially about this guy who's like kind of a dork. Evan Marsh is really funny. I think there's a way that he could have, and he's going to put some people off, but I thought he had great comic timing. And I thought he found a way to play this kind of a geek in a really sort of endearing and fresh way. Other people will, I know, feel differently, but he is a journalist at like a Fangoria type magazine, and he finds himself at a 12-step meeting for serial killers, and has to kind of talk his way out of there. And then the movie goes in some other directions that I won't spoil, but it's really funny. It's got some great gore. There's nobody really recognizable in it because, again, I think it's Canadian. David Koechner does have a role because he shows up in a lot of horror movies, which is always funny.
Always a welcome addition to any cast for me.
And Julian Rishings, is that his name, from anything?
For Jackson,
yeah.
Yeah, that's him.
He's in there too. Like I said, streaming on Shudder, but a huge pleasant surprise for me. I really dug it a lot.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Wow, so I apparently have to get caught up on my Shudder movie.
Apparently.
That's where we're at with this.
Yeah.
All right. Boy, oh boy. All right. You're giving me way too much homework now. Now, this is too much, Patrick.
I apologize.
Okay. How dare you? How dare you introduce me to other cool, great movies?
I'm deeply sorry.
Oh, gosh. All right. So we're at number four now.
Yeah.
I will say what's interesting is out of my top four, three slots are occupied by female directors.
Interesting.
Yes.
Only one of mine is because I'm a shitty person.
I know that, but that's okay. So we still love you anyway.
Thank you.
All right. So my number four, is a movie that I was like, you have to see this. I still don't even know if you really liked it that much. I freaking loved it. I've already watched it like four or five times because now it's on Hulu. And that is Prano Bailey Bond's Censor.
Okay. That is not on my list, but I did see it.
Yes. Which is, you know, that was one of my miscalculations. that apparently the Matrix Resurrections was like two big miscalculations. The first time I saw this movie, like I loved it. And then the more time that I spent with it, because like, I watched it for Sundance, then I watched it for its release. And once it hit Hulu, it's a really good late night movie when you're working.
Yeah.
And everything's quiet. It's so freaking effective in that way. But I love, and I'm so going to bust up her name, Niamh Algar.
Sure.
She plays Enid in the movie.
Okay.
There's there's just something about her performance in this movie that I can't get out of my head. Because of where things go with her, I get it. Like, I feel her pain. I feel her loss. I feel her, the things that are sort of driving her in this movie. I think it's such an interesting way to kind of look at something that I didn't know much about. Like, I knew about video nasties in the UK. I knew about, like, their ratings were, you know, a lot more strict than, like, how we dealt with movies here in the 80s. But I didn't really know much about it. And I thought it was interesting to dive into that from the perspective of somebody who was sort of responsible for all this stuff. Because it was just not what, you know, it's not the story you're expecting. Especially as a horror fan, to make us try to sympathize with the people that are trying to keep movies away from us. But I think it does say something interesting about sort of the effects of cinematic violence, of cinema in general, of the concept of visual imagery and how that can affect us psychologically. But I think it does it in a way that doesn't judge those things. It just shows if somebody's in a certain state of mind, what it can do to them.
Yeah.
And where it pushes them. But I freaking loved it. It's just, again, it's, as we get higher in my list, it's movies that I've really spent a lot of time with this year, and watched multiple times, and I know I'll keep watching them for years to come. And as I mentioned, like, if you haven't seen Sensor yet, I know it is on, it should be on Hulu still. I don't think they pulled it.
It is. Yeah, it's on Hulu.
But you know, it's, again, it's a movie that was made, you know, with not a ton of resources. And I think they do a really great job of, again, you know, you have to, it's time period specific because it's the 80s. And I just, it was really interesting to me to, like, sort of get a sense of where the UK was in the 80s, because it's not something I'm familiar with. Like, I know the US in the 80s. I lived it. I don't know anything about what the UK was like then. And I think, again, that's why I sort of liked last night. So, like, movies that'll sort of transport me into these unfamiliar times and places that really, I don't know, just kind of enhances my understanding of things that I don't really know.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm just, I like to learn a little bit as I go along, I suppose. But I think that sort of the last 10 minutes of that movie are just like, wait, what? in the best possible way. And yeah, I just, I'm a really, really big fan.
Yeah. It's a movie that I have, like, I have nothing bad to say about. It's just that the second half, or maybe the last third, ends up not totally being for me, because it doesn't go in the directions that I was maybe hoping it would go. The first half, as I watched it, and again, this was, I think, my one Sundance movie last year. The first half is, like, my favorite horror movie of the year. I love the premise. I love that it's set in this world of video nasties and censoring, like you said, you know, in the 1980s. It just ultimately doesn't do what, where it goes, I couldn't follow, but it makes me so excited to see whatever Prano Bailey Bond does next, because it's this, the work of a born filmmaker. You watch and you're just like, oh my gosh, I cannot, she's going to do amazing things.
Yeah, honestly, for me, the ending really felt similar, like, to Saint Maud in a lot of ways.
Another movie that, well, I liked Censor a lot more than Saint Maud.
And but also, it's like, I think, did Saint Maud actually come out this year?
Yeah.
Because I saw it in 2020. And then I remember, like, I think we were getting teased about it in 2019.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
What is time anymore? But I think that would make a hell of a double feature, because it's just two women that are putting these beliefs into something that they're not. And then ultimately have very similar outcomes in a way.
Okay, sure.
You know what I mean? Like, the, yeah, you sort of have that overlap of, like, they're seeing, their interpretation of what's happening in those final moments are different than the actuality of their scenarios.
Right.
Which is interesting. So
yeah.
But I like Saint Maud. Jeez, I can't believe it. Okay, well, sorry, Saint Maud.
Yeah, Saint Maud didn't do a lot for me, and I think, again, that just has to do with my allergy to religious horror.
I get it. I see. I think for me, like, I'm super into that because I lived through a lot of that crap. So,
exactly. Yeah.
You know, so I think it all, you know, it depends on what you're looking for.
Right.
So, all right.
All right. Are we at my four?
We are.
I feel like my four might be higher on your list, but I could be wrong. But if it is, we'll wait to talk about it. My four is the other studio horror movie that I have on my list, and that is James Wan's Malignant.
It is higher on my list.
All right, then we will wait until we get to it on your list. So what is your three?
Okay, so my three is... this is another movie that I saw at Fantastic Fest. God bless Fantastic Fest this year. They had a really, really phenomenal lineup. And it is Julia DeCornau's Titan.
Oh, sure.
Yes. It's not Titan, everybody, because she corrected all of us at the festival. Like a bunch of
idiots. I always call it Titan, by the way.
Yeah, but it's really Titan. And talk about a movie that just, it's so layered. And it's like, you think the whole movie is this whole, because like, you hear the premise and it's a girl who has sex with cars, right? That's how they're kind of...
Well, she has sex with a car. I don't know if she has sex with but here's the thing, lots of cars.
You don't really know that, though, going True. Into it. You just True. Know she's attracted to vehicles. Actually, no, she has sex with another one, too.
Does she? Okay.
Yes, there's the fire truck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you have this woman who, because of an accident she had as a child, she's inexplicably drawn sexually to mechanical things. And I don't even know if I want to say anything more than that.
Right.
But like, so I was going into this movie for this super wild ride, right? And I walked away from it like crying.
Sure.
Because it turns into something, you know, once like, again, God, it's like so hard to talk about without like going into like things that I think are really best revealed when you're watching it. But like Alexia, who is like the main gal played by Agatha Roussel, like she...
Most fearless performance of the year.
Jesus Christ. Like if there was any justice in the world, we would be talking about this. Like if you put any weight into the Oscars, we would be talking about this because nobody did a performance like she did this year. I don't care who you are. No, nobody touches that performance because you have to be able to strip everything away. Literally and figuratively.
Right.
To make that performance work. And she is so good. And it's like, it's just where it goes. And it's like, there's like this inherent sadness and like this crazy unbelievability. And then it turns into sort of like this sort of weird, like homoerotic, like dance fest that like is also touching in a way and like moving and just like absolutely phenomenal performances. And I think it's Vincent Lindon, who I don't really know much about. He moved me. Like you think he's this type of character, and once you get towards the end of it, like you realize who he really is.
Yeah.
And he legitimately made me emotional. And like again, you have this finale that you're like, I can't even believe this is happening. And like I loved Raw, but like Titan, like I needed some ballsy ass cinema for 2021, which we got here stateside with Malignant, which we'll go into eventually. But this for me, like wow, like, and I get if this isn't somebody's cup of tea. Believe me, if there's any movie where I'm like, oh, I get it, it's fine.
Right.
You know,
right.
This is not a movie for everybody. It's not a movie for probably most people. But it was so completely my shit that, like, I'm in awe of Julia's talent. I will follow her to the ends of the earth for whatever she does. And I loved it. I loved everything about this movie.
Yeah, it's a hell of a movie. It's a hell of a swing, you know, and I like a big swing. And there was probably not a bigger swing in 2021 than Titan. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
This is what I get also for taking French for like 7 years. So
I took it too, and I still am calling it Titan. So good job, me.
Good job.
Well, I didn't see her do any press, so I have an excuse. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think I found myself admiring its courage and what it was managing to accomplish to start out as being so out there and then ending in such an intimate, like, human place. I found myself admiring, but kind of remaining on the outside of, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. I totally get that. Because, again, it's like you have to buy into what's happening for it. You know what I mean? And it's, and some people just can't. And I get it. Like, I totally get it. Because it doesn't, there's part, like, you're like, really? Okay. And I think I was just so immersed in that performance from Agatha. Like, I just was like, yeah, I get it. I know where this, like, I'm so in this to see where she ends up.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I just, like, I love ballsy out there filmmaking, and I want to see more of this. Like, I want, you know, I want Julie to be making movies like this for the next 40 years. I'll probably be dead by then, but that's fine. Like, just keep doing them. Like, to me, I was just like, wow. Like, and again, it's one of these movies that, like, I don't think a lot of people got to see because it was like, it had sort of like a weird distribution here in the States with Neon, and like, I think it was just theatrical only for a while, and then it kind of went to VOD like a month later. I don't even know where it's at these days. I don't even know if it's gotten a Blu-ray yet. I have the Neon set from the critics,
stuff.
So I've rewatched it a few times through there. But like, if you really want to be taken on a ride, like, again, sort of literally and figuratively, like, this might do it for you.
Yeah. There is a Blu-ray that supposedly is coming out next week. I can't tell if that's a region one or what.
Okay.
I think it is. I can't totally tell. But there is a Blu-ray that's coming out. It is also available, you know, to rent for streaming, which is how I saw it. But yeah, I know it played, like, the multiplexes out by me, and I just can't imagine, like, what the walkouts were in that situation.
I mean, I don't even know what the walk-ins were like, to be really honest.
True.
Because, again, it wasn't like a movie I really saw advertised much, so I feel like this is a movie for movie geeks. You know what I mean? Like, you sort of had to be in the know to go find this. But I kind of like that. Like, it should be that way. You know, this isn't a movie you take the family to. I mean, unless you have the super coolest family ever, which is possible.
It is.
You know, but yeah, I just, if it's a movie you haven't had a chance to make time for, just give it a shot. You never know.
Absolutely.
You know, you just never know. But boy, what a 1-2 punch between Raw and this.
Yeah, for sure. No, she can do anything.
Yep. So, all right, where are you at number two?
My three. My number three is the most recent watch for me. I just watched this like 2 weeks ago. It's another one that I streamed on Hulu because it's another IFC Midnight title. And it is called We Need to Do Something.
I had a feeling that was going to be totally your jam as well. I liked it a lot, too. So,
oh, man, did I fucking love this movie. Like, I watched it. I think Elric talked about it on his show. And so I was like, oh, that sounds kind of up my alley, and watched it. And
I might have mentioned it to you, too, during festival season.
Oh, you very well may have. But you got to remember.
I know Elric. It's fine.
No, it's just a lot more recent. So, I don't think I had a way of seeing it during festival season.
I think it was at Fantasia, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was part of the Fantasia lineup, I want to say. Because I watched it at home. I didn't see it outside the house. So. Okay.
I definitely missed it if it was at Fantasia, and I was watching Fantasia stuff this year. I completely missed it, which is a bummer. Cause,
well, they have like 300 movies.
Right,
too.
Exactly. So it's about a family that gets stuck in a bathroom. And I won't even say anything beyond that. But the family is Pat Healy plays the dad. Vanessa Shaw from Eyes Wide Shut and Hocus Pocus plays the mom. The daughter is played by Sierra McCormick, who, I didn't know this. I was watching it, and my son Charlie was in the room, and he was like kind of half paying attention enough that he must have Googled it on his own. And he said, "Oh, you know, the girl who plays Melissa, she was Olive on Ant Farm." And I was like, "Holy shit," because Ant Farm played a lot in my house. It was like a Disney show that my kids watched all the time. And I
Yeah,
was
she's also.
very, go
Oh, go
ahead.
ahead. I'm sorry. No, you go ahead.
I was very familiar with Olive from Ant Farm and had no idea that that's who I was watching this entire movie. I didn't see The Vast of Night. Is that what you're going to point out?
Yeah, I was going to say she's phenomenal in The Vast of Night, which I think is still on Amazon Prime.
Okay, yeah, I still haven't seen it. Apparently she's in VFW. What's going on?
Yeah, she's the on the punk side of things.
Oh my gosh. Anyway,
She really disappears into roles for you, I
I
guess,
guess
is
so, because I've seen Olive from Ant Farm and stuff and not haven't realized it's her. Yeah, I just loved this movie. It's really darkly funny. I love, again, talking about limitations. You know, it's basically set inside one room. We do kind of flashback to outside the bathroom every once in a while for some context in terms of what might be going on. But I love how much of the movie is just suggested. There's a moment where a dog talks that is amazing and one of the best moments in a movie in 2021.
yes,
It's so
that was
great.
that. I wanted to stand up in my living room and clap at that moment.
Yeah. And apparently that's Ozzy
It was.
Osbourne's voice, by the way, which I did not know.
Is it really? Good for
Yeah.
him.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But I
Yeah,
loved it. It is my number three.
Pat Healy is terrifying in that movie,
He is,
and
yeah.
that's saying something because he was also in Them this last year, and he's really terrifying in that as well.
I didn't
I don't know
see
if you
them.
watched.
No.
It's a lot.
Okay.
It was I watched the whole series and it's incredibly well done and it's really fantastic storytelling, but boy, it's a lot. But he plays like a racist neighbor in that movie or in that series, and he starts off where you're like, okay, he's just mildly racist. And then by the end, you're like, oh no, Pat Healy, please don't be like this. But that's how convincing he is in it. Like and Pat Healy's like the nicest guy ever.
Yeah.
And, in between these two roles, I'm like, oh, I'm kind of scared of Pat Healy now. Go
Yeah,
figure. So, but yeah, I had a feeling that one was going to be up your alley.
it is.
And you said that one's on Hulu now, right?
It is, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize.
I'm hoping there's a Blu-ray. There usually is. Scream Factory usually puts out the IFC Midnight titles, and I'm hoping they may have already put this one out. I don't know, but I would like to own it because I could see myself revisiting it.
Yeah, because you never know streaming. Like, it lives on Hulu now, but who knows what's going to
Right,
happen? Hulu
exactly.
knows what's going to happen to it later.
I like what you did there.
Oh, this is why you paid the big bucks, Patrick, for things like that.
There's currently no Blu-ray, but
But
maybe
maybe we'll see, Who
down the
knows?
road, yeah. Hulu knows.
Hulu knows. Oh, that's such a good that's a good thing. I like that.
All right, top two.
Oh boy, this was so tough to go between which one. Like, oh, it was tough. So my number two is James Wan's Malignant.
Okay, very nice.
All right, dude, like, I'm paraphrasing what somebody else said, but like, basically, this was James Wan getting a blank check from Warner Brothers
Yeah.
to make whatever batshit crazy horror movie he wanted to do, and
Yeah.
he went out and did it, and bless him for it. Like. He's like, yeah, I made you $1 billion. Can I have 10 million bucks to go make a crazy horror movie? Yeah, sure. Here you go. All right, cool. We're gonna turn this into like the weirdest episode of X-Files ever. But also like infuse it with Italian horror. And I know everybody talks about giallo elements, and I get it. There's a gloved killer, there's a fun little weapon, but to me, it just feels more Italian in general than it does specifically giallo.
Sure, yes, I would
And
agree with that.
also, apparently, it's got a lot of Highlander influences in it as well.
Really?
Because I think Silver Cup is like a reference to something in Highlander. I haven't seen the Highlander movies, or at least the first two, like in forever.
Yeah.
But that was something that came up when I was talking to one of the effects people that they said that like Highlander was a big influence on James for this movie. Go figure. So if you look at like when in one of the scenes when like you see out there, it says Silver Cup Apartments. Apparently that's a reference to Highlander. I'm not going to pretend that I knew that. So, you know, in case anybody wants to go back and pick up all the little trail of fun tidbits that James leaves in this movie. But like, holy shit. Like, I knew I was in like the first 20 minutes. I was like, okay, I kind of thought I knew where the movie was going. And I was like, all right, so we're doing the typical James Wan. There's something spooky going on in a house. You know, there's some sort of traumatic event and somebody has to deal with that, blah, blah, blah. And then it was like, oh my God, what are we doing now? And then it was like, I just was like, I wanted to stand up in sheer, like, when they revealed Gabriel in that movie, I was like, oh my God, what are we doing? You beautiful bastard. And I was like, you did something. I just, like, it's so hard to surprise me anymore.
Yes.
So when a movie can genuinely surprise me, like I'm going to love it. It's just, it's science. I still think like everybody wants to make fun of the jail cell scene. I think it's one of the greatest things we've seen all year in cinema. And then it's followed up by like an incredible action sequence inside the police station.
Yep.
Like that chair throw is like the most ridiculously cool thing. it blows my mind. And it's like fantastic performances. Like Annabelle Wallace is great, but like, you know, and I also recently interviewed Marina Mazzeppa from it, who does most of the physical work. Twisty Troy does some of it as well. He does more of the body contortion stuff, but all the stuff where like Gabriel's walking backwards and stuff, that like that was really in camera and like that was real, and she could do that with her body and do it so convincingly that like all these things that they were building special effects wise, they were able to scrap because she could just do it,
right?
Which is like insane. It's just insane. Like I still, you know, I watched the movie like 4 times, I think, and like I still like stop it at a certain point. I'm like, what the shit? How does this even, like, how is this possible? I can't wrap my head around it. And even, like, talking with her and talking with the effects people, like, it was, on a technical level, such an incredibly hard movie to pull off. Because there's so many different moving parts to make that character of Gabriel work. And the way that they did it, like, it is movie magic. And also what's really interesting, too, for anybody who didn't read the interview that I did, like, Marina had, she had to learn English to read the script.
Wow.
It's like, cause she wasn't fluent in English at the time that this came to her. And so she basically had to teach herself English in order to do this. So yeah, it was, I'm in awe of it. It's probably my favorite James Wan movie, in recent years. Like to me, it has such a rewatchability.
Yeah.
You know, like, I like his Conjuring movies a lot. You know, I like the Insidious movies a lot. But for me, like, if I want to go and have a good time, this is the movie. You know, this is it for me.
It is. It's a studio horror movie that feels like a little gift. Just, you don't know what to expect from it. It's got so much energy. It's so inventive.
It feels like a movie, like, if it had come out in the 80s, Vinegar Syndrome would be putting it out.
Yeah, today. For sure.
You know, and everybody who kind of, like, poo-poos it now, and I'm like, just wait. In 10 years, you're going to finally realize, like, oh, no, that was actually pretty cool, because that's how it works.
Yeah. I kind of don't want them to sequelize it.
I don't either.
I just want it to be this one weird little one-off, like, oh, my God, have you heard of this movie, Malignant? instead of, you know, sort of diluting the brand by sequelizing it and doing more Gabriel movies. Like, I think it works as just a standalone thing.
I totally agree. But then there's also James Wan, who literally writes one character and can create like 3 different like franchises based off of that. Like,
very true.
One character spawns a different character.
Right.
It's like,
right.
And then you've got like, you know, a bunch of different franchises. So, you know, I agree with you, though. I think for it to preserve its moment in modern history, I want it to be a one and done.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
So, but it was pretty, you know, I don't know how it did money-wise, but I don't even know if it matters. Because, again, James has made them so much money
Yeah.
over the years where it's like, you know, even if this lost $30 million, like, you know, he's still come out ahead. And I still feel like Warner Brothers is going to let him do whatever he wants, which they should.
Probably.
So, but yeah, I just, again, it's one of those, like, just to find a studio movie that does this, you know,
and yeah,
again,
right. It's like sort of these, right.
like how much fun would it be to watch this in Teton, like just back to back.
Yeah.
Like you want to go on the craziest 4-hour journey of your life. Like, here you go. Go for it.
It's just exciting to see filmmakers taking chances. And like I said earlier, when we were talking about Teton, like it's just taking big swings. And Malignant takes big swings, and I think they pay off.
And the thing is, it's not even like James is at a point in his career where he has to.
Right. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, right.
Because even if he was capable of making a mediocre movie, it would still be better than so many other movies out there.
Yeah.
It's just kind of ridiculous and unfair at this point. So... But yeah, as soon as I was like, oh my God, I that was another one. I texted you as soon as I saw it. I was like, you need to see this movie.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
And so, like, so badly.
Yeah.
So.
You were right.
That was another one I was right. So yep. There you go.
You're doing good.
I did. I was about 50-50 on the year.
that's good.
You know, some years are, but you know, I'm a little better than others. So what can I do? So what's your number two?
My number two is The Stylist. From Jill Gevorgisian.
I totally forgot that movie was a 2021
well,
movie
it was
as
a,
well.
It was a 2020 movie. You know, it kind of did festivals and it did its like Kickstarter debut in 2020, but it didn't actually get distribution and release until like March of 2021. But I knew in 2020 that like, oh, if this comes out next year, this is going to be on my top 10 because I really loved it. She adapted her own short film starring Najara Townsend as a stylist who essentially murders her clients, some clients, not all clients. And she, I had no idea because I really loved the short, but I just had no clue what a feature length adaptation would be, and it turns into like this character study that reminds me a lot of Bill Lustig's Maniac in terms of like she's incredibly lonely, she's incredibly socially awkward, which is hilarious because she looks like Najara Townsend, but she
right?
She can't connect with other people, and then she sort of befriends Bria Grant, who hires her to do her hair for her upcoming wedding. And the story kind of takes off from there. I know, you know, she had some co-writers, Eric Havens and Eric, is it Stolze? Stolze? I don't know.
Eric Stolze.
Stolze, okay. Helped her adapt this into a feature-length screenplay. And I just think it's incredibly gorgeous and assured. There's sequences that feel like Brian De Palma. I am a mark for Bria Grant, so anytime she's in something, I'm probably going to like it. I love how much of the movie is about textures, what things feel like, you know? It's a very sort of sensory movie, which I think is really, really cool because we don't see a lot of horror films that focus on that kind of touch aspect.
Yeah.
Najara Townsend gives a great performance in the lead as Claire. I just loved everything about it.
I'm right there with you. And again, I can't believe I forgot that came out this year. It was great to see Jill get a chance to go out and do a feature too.
Yes.
Because I know she's been wanting to do that for so long. I hope we get more from her. But yeah, who doesn't want to be Bria Grant's best friend? I want to be Bria Grant's
me
best
too.
Friend. So, you know, I get it. I totally get it. I probably would have become obsessed as well. but yeah, there's such an elegance to the way it's directed.
Yeah.
It very much is sort of like, it's like the yin to Maniac's yang. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah,
like
Maniac is so just like grimy
gritty,
and sleazy.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But it's also textures, but in like a different way. Like
right.
You just, you feel like the ugliness and the griminess and the grunge of New York in the 80s.
Yeah.
Where this feels, you know, it's like silky and like, sensual in a way, you know? So it's very much is a yin and yang. But yeah, I was a big fan as well.
Nice. All right. That brings us to the moment of truth.
Oh boy.
Number one favorite horror movie of the year. I'll be honest, I can't even think of what it is. And I've been trying to keep track, and I'm like, I thought I knew, but I don't think I know what it is. So I'm excited to hear the title.
So this one is my cheat.
I know what it is now. You cheater.
I am cheating because I am going with the Fear Street trilogy. It's like, I can't even, like, look, it caters to everything that I love about, like, slasher movies. But then also the third one goes into, like, this sort of historic folk witchy horror. Like, it just, it was, like, the most exciting, like, 2 months of, like, my year. Was just waiting for the next Fear Street to drop.
Yeah.
And like, first of all, we lived in a year where, like, we had a female director at the helm of three movies that, like, that doesn't happen very often. I was like, oh, this is so cool. And I liked Lee Janiak's work in Honeymoon. You know, I really enjoyed that movie. But this is so, so different. It's like a totally different animal than that movie. And there's just, like, you know, people want to complain about the needle drops, like, get bent. I don't care. And I'll tell you, like, it was one of those, like, so I had screeners for the first two. And then I think there was, like, a little bit of, like, a COVID surge when the third one was being screened here in L.A. And I was going to go, and I was like, you know, I'm just going to wait for it to hit Netflix. And then I literally was like, well, if I'm waiting here till midnight, I might as well watch the first two again and just go right into it. Which is what I did. And it was just, like, such a satisfying, like, little mini marathon of movies. I watched them all again during October. And they just fit so perfectly into the Halloween season. They're all so wonderfully distinct in their own ways and yet all cohesively come back together so that, like, it all matters. And, like, the deaths that you get, especially in the first two, because three is different. Three is, like, sort of like an interpretation of a story using the same actors from the first two. It's so it has a little bit of a different rhythm to it. But, like, the deaths in one and two, like, I felt them in that bread slicer. There's a bread slicer kill, which, you know, I'm not going to be super specific in case somebody hasn't by any chance seen it. But, like, that was, like, probably the gnarliest kill I've seen all year. Yeah,
for sure.
Like, that was, like, you know, if you're somebody who grew up in the 80s and you're watching, you know, like, super fun, you know, splattery type movies, like, that had to make you happy. Because, like, wow. They went for it. And, like, you could tell Netflix just let her do what she wanted to do. Because it would have been easy, especially considering, like, you know, it's very teen-centric, to sort of pull back on things. You know what I mean? And make it a little safer for teens. But it has, like, enough edge to where, like, us grown-ups, like, we can really appreciate it too. But I also think it's a really good entry point for, like, teens who have sort of grown out of, you know, sort of those mid-level intro movies and are looking to kind of get into horror more. And, like, I'm so blown away by it. Like, I couldn't believe how much fun. And it was even, like, Brian was saying, too, like, because, like, he was just like, oh, you're going to make me watch this stupid teen movie, because he hates stupid teen movies. And I was like, just trust me on this. Like, you're going to have fun. And the minute, like, it finished, he was like, oh, my God, like, when does the next one come? And then the second one, like, then delivers up this super fun, even more retro-y slasher movie, you know, that basically gives us all these things that all of us slasher fans love. And, like, I just... And the way that it all just layers together, like, it's just phenomenal. I would love a home media release for it. And I know Netflix is notorious for not doing that. But I want to see more of how this all came together, because I know, you know, they had to really work smart on this movie in terms of the timing and things like that. Because I think they shot most of 78 first. And then they went into 94 and then went into 1666. And I don't even care if technically the time period is off. Like, just give me any movie set in the year 1666 and I don't give a shit. But also Kiana, I'm going to totally blank on her. Oh, it's Madeira. She's great in this movie. Like, she really brings all three of these stories together. And I think she's phenomenal. And I loved it. And it was great. And it also opens with a character named Heather, played by Maya Hawke. So
nice.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know, basically you throw a character named Heather into a Scream scenario.
Number one.
Yeah. I'm right here.
That's your ticket to first place.
It is. There you go. That's all I needed. That is literally all I needed. And like, awesome. It also had like the marketing was perfect for it. It had fantastic like posters and like, it was just, you felt like, it didn't feel like a typical Netflix project. Like, you felt love and reverence for horror. It wasn't them just sort of spitting out another whatever. Like, it felt like somebody really cared about this. And everybody involved really cared about it. And that doesn't typically happen with a lot of Netflix stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Criterion puts out Netflix stuff.
What?
Criterion, like, they put out physical releases of Netflix stuff. They did.
I'm not fancy enough to own a lot of Criterion.
Well, yeah, they did The Irishman. They did.
Well, that's Scorsese.
Okay, but I'm saying they did Marriage Story. They did. They've done a few.
But they've done like the fancy Oscar movies.
Yeah. They haven't done Red Notice or anything.
They're not doing Six Underground.
Right, exactly.
Totally deserves a Criterion.
We each went with a different Ryan Reynolds movie, and that's what I respect about
it. I still haven't watched Red Notice yet. Can you believe that shit?
I haven't either, but yeah, it definitely surprises me coming from you.
Dude, it's like, it's Dwayne Johnson and Ryan Reynolds in a movie together. I don't even care that it's bad. The fact that I haven't seen it is probably the most surprising thing to come out of last year, to be very honest.
Yeah.
It's a movie made for me. So I'm curious to see what your number one is, because I have no idea. I like how we're surprising each other.
Yeah, if anybody has sort of been paying attention to my writing over the last year or so, I've talked about this movie a couple times as my favorite horror movie of the year, and that is Travis Stevens' Jacob's Wife.
Gotcha. I have about 9 movies that were like, could have been on my list as well.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to have to do a top 20, I think. We're going to have to come back for a second episode.
All right.
But I'm a big fan of Jacob's Wife. I actually think when you talk about like fantastic performances, like Barbara Crampton in this movie is right up there.
Yes.
Because I felt everything about that performance.
I think it's the best thing she's ever done. And that's saying something when you think about her resume and how good she is and everything that she's in. But I think this is not only the best part she's ever had to play, but I think it's the best performance she's ever given. I think Larry Fessenden is so, so great in a part that you wouldn't expect him to play. He doesn't usually get parts like this. I think it's really, you know, funny. It's gory. It says a ton of things about relationships and sort of what we put into them, what we expect from a partner. It says a lot of things about what it means to be a woman and to be ignored, to not be listened to, and to find yourself with some power finally in a relationship so that the dynamic shifts. I think it's such a smart, interesting movie that also happens to be incredibly entertaining. I just love it.
Yeah, it's one of those, when I was watching it, it just took me back to sort of how I felt about the year before my divorce, where I was like, where you just suddenly figure out that you've disappeared into this marriage and you don't know what your value is anymore. And I got that on a really deeply personal level. And also it has Robert Russler in it, which, you know, just go ahead and serve it right up to me, Travis. And of course you also have CM Punk in there as well, my buddy, you know, doing sort of like a comedic kind of little supporting role thingy that just pops up a little bit here and there, but still makes me laugh. And honestly, like in any other year, this would have made it. I literally have like 9 other movies that are sitting here on my list. And I'm just like, I can't believe I didn't put these on there. And this is one of them. But I had a sneaking suspicion you were going to put it on yours. So I was like, well, we're going to talk about Jacob's Wife, kind of like how you felt with Werewolves Within.
Right, exactly. It's kind of nice when we can spotlight more movies instead of having the same list, right? We only had two movies that crossed over, and they were both the studio movies. Isn't that interesting? All of our indies were different.
And believe me, there's so many movies that I'm really bummed out that I wasn't able to include here, and I feel bad about it, but, you know. We could, I probably could have done a top 20 for this year. And that, there's years where we've done this where that hasn't been the case, where we've had to
cheat
a little bit with like genre adjacent movies.
Exactly, yeah.
Or TV, throw in a TV series. And I have TV series is like as my alternates. Like, believe me, it was a really, really good year to be a horror fan.
Definitely.
It, beyond the fact that everything else sucked in the world, like, it was a good time to be a horror fan.
Do you want to run down your list again from 10 to 1 just to repeat so everybody can write down the titles?
Yes. So number 10 for me was the Slumber Party Massacre remake. Number 9 was Come True. Number 8 was Spiral, the Book of Saw. Number 7 was Last Night in Soho. Number 6 was The Night House. Number 5 was Werewolves Within. Number 4 was Censor. Number 3 was Titan. Number 2 was Malignant. And number 1 was the Fear Street Trilogy.
Very nice. A great top 13, you monster. My number 10 was The Empty Man. Number 9, VHS 94. Number 8, The Night House. Number 7, For the Sake of Vicious. Number 6, Candisha. Number 5, Vicious Fun. Number 4, Malignant. Number 3, We Need to Do Something. Number 2, The Stylist. And number 1, Jacob's Wife.
Nice. Do you have, like, alternates?
Not really. Werewolves Within would probably be on there. I feel like there were a few that were on your list that I was like, oh, yeah, that would probably make, like, an honorable mentions list.
Yeah, for me, it was really tough because, like, I know I'm in the minority, but Antlers really hit me hard.
I still haven't seen Antlers.
And I get why people don't love it, but I love it for the reasons that people don't love it.
Okay.
So that was an alternate on my list. That came off once I realized I didn't have Last Night in Soho on my list. I was like, oh, shit. Reworking here. Another movie that I really loved was My Heart Can't Beat Unless You Tell It To.
I haven't seen that one either.
Which is a very unique vampire movie with Patrick Fugit in it, which I think is phenomenal. Another movie that I think is worth finding is The Last Matinee, which I think might be streaming on Arrow.
That one I have seen, and that's a really entertaining movie, again, if you're a fan of Italian horror.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Again, it was one of those, I wasn't sure what was going to go with it. Like, and I was, again, and it also, it's like 84 minutes, I think. It's pretty quick.
Yeah.
So that's another one. Psycho Gorman is another one that it just really hurt. Like, I was like, oh my God, how do I not put this on? Because I love hunky boys.
Psycho Gorman was on my mainstream top 10, so I didn't include it on my horror list, but that movie was made for me.
See, I don't get the benefit of two.
I know.
Yeah. I also, there's a really fun sort of crime capery type movie called Bloody Hell that I think is a lot of fun. Streaming.
It's you can rent it on Amazon, but it's not. Okay. I just watched it like yesterday.
It was, again, it was one of these movies I didn't really know much about, and I was like, oh, this is really fun and interesting.
Yeah.
So that was another one that made my sort of runner-up list. The Feast is another one that I really enjoyed a lot. There's also, I don't know if you've seen I Blame Society.
Nope.
Which is like a super cutting satire of Hollywood and just how ridiculous it can be to try to get a movie made in this industry. And it's, again, it's one of those, like, very rarely will Brian get caught up in a lot of my screeners. Like, he'll kind of be doing stuff around the house and just kind of come through and out. But like, he was like 10 minutes into this movie, which again, I think is like 83 or 4 minutes. And he was like, well, I have to sit down and see how this is going to go. And it's sort of like a meta mockumentary that takes a really dark turn. And I think it's, oh gosh, I'm totally blanking on the gal. And I interviewed her for Indie Horror Month. And I cannot believe that I am totally blanking on her name. Oh goodness.
Jillian Wallace Horvat?
Yes. I don't know why I had Jillian Jacobs in my head because I think you mentioned her earlier something. But it's got all your favorite people in it.
Yeah, it sure does.
So I think this is something you'd be interested in as well.
Yeah.
And then also there's a really fun little, again, another mockumentary, but this one is super, super like goofy comedy that sort of pokes fun at the Vice format of things. And it's called 15 Things You Didn't Know About Bigfoot. Number one will blow your mind.
I remember that title, but
it was originally called like Vice's Guide to Bigfoot.
Okay.
Like when it did its initial festival run. And then I think they had to change it. Because maybe Vice was a little persnickety about it, but it's pretty hilarious. And then also, honestly, I kind of hurt my heart a little bit to not include Silent Night in there, because that's another movie that, like, that's a doozy of a movie that it's, like, really funny, but also really heartbreaking and kind of intense.
Yeah, I've been avoiding it.
It's not, like, in a super depressive way.
Okay.
But for a first-time feature, the director... Camille, oh my goodness, her son is the kid who plays Jojo Rabbit.
Okay.
And he's also in Silent Night, and I'm totally blanking on her name. But it's her first feature ever, and it's one of these movies, like, I love Christmas movies, like, that's, I, you know, we're speaking outside of horror, like, I love Christmas movies. So I'm like 15 minutes into this movie and it feels like a typical heartwarming Christmas movie, and I was like, wait, isn't this like the movie where like everything's terrible? Like, it was like such a weird thing. And then it was like, and then it all starts to kind of get revealed and things like that. You know, but honestly, like I can't believe in a year where I had a Halloween movie released and it didn't even make my list.
No, it did come close to making my list.
Like, I rewatched it last night because I watched the extended cut last night.
Is it better?
I don't know if it's better. It just has extra stuff in it.
Okay.
But it definitely...
Is the alternate ending better?
I don't know that it's alternate. It's just extra.
Okay. Got it.
Like, because what happened was I watched the extended cut of it, and then it went into all, like, the special features and stuff. So if there's something beyond that that's alternate, I haven't seen it yet.
Got it.
But it basically just solidifies, like, the person that we think is probably dead at the end of the movie is very much dead.
Oh, yeah. And, I didn't think there was any question.
Well, I mean, they get slashed a little bit, but okay. Like the extended cut, like, it's way more brutal.
Got it.
Like, it's like Argento would be proud.
Then I have no interest in seeing the extended cut.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's some extra gore, a little bit of extra scenes here and there for some character development. But, like, overall, I don't know that it adds too much to it. It's a movie that I struggle with because I want to love it because it's Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure, you know, as time goes on, I'll soften on it a little bit more. But it just the script just frustrates me. Like, it still just really frustrates me.
I can't imagine why.
You know, I mean, I get Evil Dies Tonight, but, like... For the love of God. I told Brian, I said, you know, honestly, like, this is what I'm going to do. It's like the day that my ticket is punched and I'm about to take my last breath. I'm like, I don't care who is in the room. I am going to look at them and who cares what age I am. And I'm like, I'm going to look at them square in the eyes and just say Evil Dies Tonight. And that's how I'm going out. And they're going to either get it or they won't.
Nice.
But that's going to be my final moment.
I like it.
Yeah. And it's like, I even really loved Candyman. And it still was... it just was such a freaking great year. It was really, really tough.
Yeah.
And like part of me even wanted to put Nightmare Alley on there too, but that's a little more fantasy. So I was like, I'm going to just focus on the horror stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just, it was really tough. And again, there's like 15 or 20 other movies that I didn't even mention. that I just totally loved. So I'm surprised that Ghostbusters Afterlife wasn't your number one, though.
It was close.
I figured.
Yeah, it was. It was number one with a bullet for a long time.
Mm. And it's like, also, I didn't even mention Godzilla versus Kong, which was like ridiculously fun. But I think I was going more horror.
Right, you know, exactly. I get that, like, oh, they're giant monsters, but I don't, that doesn't become part of the horror conversation for me. But it was fun.
I get it. Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
And a movie I've watched again now that they put it back on HBO Max. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
God bless HBO Max.
They're pretty good.
All right, so basically, if Shudder or HBO Max wants to, like, sponsor us this year, like, we're open. We're totally open.
That would be super.
That would be super duper.
Well, thank you for doing this, Heather. It's really fun to do this every year.
Thank you for having me on and bearing with me, considering I'm my sleep is all screwed up and everything, so I appreciate it. But
you were very coherent.
That's what you say.
No more incoherent than usual.
Okay, I'll buy that.
All right.
So, and by the way, also, I was really close to cheating and putting Chucky and Midnight Mass on my list.
I was expecting Midnight Mass, which would be a cheat, even though I would allow it. But
I didn't want to cheat, but like, yeah, oof, yeah, we were spoiled all over the place.
Very much so.
So, you know, if you feel like you didn't see any good horror last year, like, keep looking.
Yeah, it's definitely out there. We told you where to find it, too. So now you know where to look. Thank you guys for listening. As always, go to fthismovie.com every day for movie stuff and follow us on Twitter at fthismovie. Heather, where can people find more of your work?
Oh, Jesus. I'm like, what? Who did I do? Of course, you know, I'm over at Daily Dead.
Yeah.
Posting stuff. This week we've got some Scream stuff going on. You can also find me over sometimes at Fangoria.com.
Mm-hmm.
I will say one of my favorite things I got to do last year was a series. As I mentioned, I talked to Marina Mazzeppa for the series I did about called Monsterpiece Theater, which was talking to a lot of the actors that sort of get overlooked when it comes to sort of making these movies happen. So I got to talk to Ratma, got to talk to Gabriel, got to talk to Psycho Gorman, got to talk to the Angel from Midnight Mass.
That's amazing.
Yes, I'm totally blanking on the last one, so I'm a jerk and I apologize. You know, so that was a really fun thing to do. So sometimes I pop up over at Fangoria, and then you can find me on Twitter at The Horror Chick. And, you know, maybe I'll be selling books directly, I don't know. But if not, and you want to go to Amazon, you know, Monsters, Makeup, and Effects Volume 1 is over there as well.
Buy it, everybody. It rules.
And, you know, it's good.
It's good.
That's my ringing endorsement. It's good.
It's got me paying attention to all the names that I see in movies now. It's got me recognizing names when I watch stuff. I'm so much more.
Time.
Well, you have to. I don't. I'm just doing it as a fan of your writing.
But even now, like as I'm watching movies, I'm like, oh, there's so and so and so and so, and I was like really excited because today the Makeup and Hairstylist Guild came out. And one of the people who's getting a lifetime achievement is Michelle Burke, who was originally interviewed in Monster Squad. And I think she's in volume 2 of Monsters, Makeup and Effects. But she was somebody who won an Oscar very early for like Clan of the Cave Bear. Also worked on like Interview with the Vampire. Also did a bunch of stuff with Tom Cruise over the years. And she's like so amazing. I got to hold her Oscar. Which was like incredible to, like to touch a real Oscar and not like one that I bought on Hollywood Boulevard that says like best writer ever or something like that or best dad. She's getting a lifetime achievement award, which I think is awesome. And she also worked on the Austin Power movies and stuff like that too. So
nice.
But yeah, so there was really some great nominees that came out in that regard today. So, but yeah, it's always fun for me, especially when I go back and like rewatch stuff. Like I just somehow I finally discovered Fade to Black, which I somehow have never watched, but I bought the Blu-ray blind.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know, and I was very struck by how melancholy that movie is.
Yeah.
But boy, what a performance from Dennis Christopher. So anyway, but it was like fun seeing the effects people there. And anyway, I just like talking about the people in movies that maybe not everybody talks about. So hopefully I'll get to do more of that this year.
I like it.
I enjoy it as well. So where can people... And where can people find you, Patrick?
Me?
Does anybody ask you that?
No. F This Movie. And where else? Sometimes Daily Dead.
Sometimes Daily Dead?
Yeah. Not as often
sometimes,
as I would
sometimes
like.
Sometimes Bloody, too, right?
Sometimes, yeah. Again, not as often as I would like. But that's because I can't come up with ideas for articles, so...
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Don't feel bad. we're all mentally doing what we can right now, Patrick. That's
yeah,
all we can do.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.